This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is BFM 89.9, 27 September 2018. We are 3 days away from the end of the quarter, and I'm Koo Soo Chong, joined by Melissa Idris and Joyce Koh. It is once again a full score of Penang presenters on BFM.
Good morning.
One girl, two boys.
I've gotten comments to say that when there's a Penang team on air in the morning run, the Penang spirit is a bit strong.
Flows free and fast.
Yeah, yeah, the Penang flag flies a little higher than usual. So perhaps, you know, we should be cognizant that this is a Klang Valley broadcast.
That's right, not a sodium chloride driven one, a salty.
But, you know, my response to that was Penang's top export is talent.
It is indeed.
Good one, Melissa.
But having said that, self-praise is no praise. Moving swiftly along. Right, so fresh from accusing OPEC of rigging oil prices at its to the detriment of the world, Donald Trump, he of the President of the United States, is now denouncing China as having been a participant in his election campaign, accusing them of meddling. And this is really weird because he's got no proof. He's gone out and opened the UN Security Council saying that China is meddling with American politics because they don't like him for interfering with China-US trade. And he's got no proof. It's really weird.
Yeah, so when I read this headline, the first thing I was looking for was like, okay, what has he got, right?
What's he got? Show us.
Yeah, so show us what proof you have that China is meddling in the midterm elections. I don't know. This is another, I guess, another platform. He's going on. It's like a tweet that's being said at the UN General Assembly now, accusing China of this. I'm wondering whether this is taking some focus away from Russia's involvement in US politics, which I think there's an investigation and some proof to that respect.
Actually, I think Donald Trump later tweeted photographs of newspaper extracts which he described as a Chinese propaganda. And then when asked at a press conference if he had any evidence of this Chinese interference, he said that he could not divulge the proof, but it would emerge. So I don't know, everyone's still waiting to look into this. But the Chinese foreign minister, I think Wang Yi, told the council that China has all along followed the principle of non-interference in other countries' domestic affairs. And it is tradition of Chinese, that's the tradition of Chinese foreign policy, not to meddle, right?
That's what they say, lah. But, you know, for proof, Donald Trump is actually posting on Instagram what he thinks are propaganda ads in the Des Moines Register, posturing as news. So, obviously, the whole Trump saga moves on. Let's also talk about the fact that Daimler is a German car maker, they own Mercedes-Benz. Now, for the first time in their history, they have now appointed a non-German guy to head the company, right? Dieter Zetsche, 65 years old, will be replaced by Ola Källenius, a 49-year-old Swedish CEO, which means that possibly from here on in, Mercedes cars will look like IKEA furniture.
No. Self-assembled. Do it yourself.
Put your E-Class together at half the price.
Wait, so why is this important? Is there something about this company that requires, you know, the heritage of having a German as top leadership?
Maybe because they've always had
like, right.
So it's just because
right?
This is the first time ever, and it is also the first time ever the boss is without a mechanical engineering background.
Yeah.
So it's one of the other firsts that they've noted.
Yeah,
What does Daimler need? I mean, doesn't Daimler need a rebranding exercise? Does it need, does it need someone at the top without this kind of technical engineering capability? What does it need in the 21st century?
It needs ideas. It needs marketing savvy. It needs someone who can grasp and grasp the zeitgeist of the day among the young people. Very quickly, let's also move along to another little snippet from the BBC about how a bunch of young people, essentially, have taken the sacred site and bared their bums on Pitarangala Rock.
Yeah, so this is in Sri Lanka. Tourists, I'm guessing they are international tourists who have come to this religious site and shown disrespect. So the site is considered sacred by Buddhists, right? So they've up and they've essentially mooned this site.
Yeah, so social media and all its travails continue to take grip because it's not just there, it's also in Mount Kinabalu.
Yeah,
right?
So we've seen that happen, you know, I think in Italy as well.
In Italy as well, and Mount Taranaki in New Zealand. So anyway, obviously the whole conversation goes on. Let's keep on the discussion in a couple of minutes with BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:10 in the morning. That was Neil Young with Hey Hey My My Into the Black. Of course, he formerly of Chris Crosby, Stills and Nash and Buffalo Springfield live performance. A fantastic track. Now, guys, I'm joined by Koo Soo Chung. I am Koo Soo Chung.
you are joined and fused by Koo Soo Chung.
Speaking of the third participle, Melissa Idris, Joyce Goh and myself, Koo Soo Chung, all of us from Penang. We're discussing the next item, and it's quite a melancholic one this early in the morning, guys. It's from the New York Times. And it's about a feature story about how the dream for education has driven parents to city centres and university centres to accompany their children as they embark on education and the tertiary education for the first time in their lives. It is also, not incidentally, the first time they've left their village, right? Mm. So they're now camping out in basically gymnasiums and empty buildings next to dormitories to accompany their children who essentially have travelled hundreds and hundreds of miles, thousands of miles in certain cases, to get a tertiary education. It's very sad. It's quite brought a bit of a tear to my eye, as they say.
Oh, you are a big softie, aren't you? Right, so this is, I think, a case in China where you have this the generation who are just going to, who have access to tertiary education, right? So, and it's a one-child policy. So imagine your only child, you're living in a village, only child has gotten into university, so you're going with him or her to university, you're sending them off to university, and you don't want to just leave them, right? So you pack a tent and you camp out, literally camp out in a tent in the gymnasium as you watch this. And at first, at first glance, it looks like it's coddling. It looks like you're spoiling or not allowing the child to be free and independent. But at a deeper glance, a deeper look, you can see that this is really about opportunity, about the lack of education, and all the hopes and dreams of the family and the village pinned on this one child.
Yeah, because many of the young people in China today are the first in their families to go to college, and actually some of the unis as well, they've started they've opened up, they've offered tents of love for free with the aim of making it easier for poor families to take part in this move-in tradition.
Tents of love. I love
tents
that.
Tents of love, yeah.
Yeah, so, if we brought it back to a Malaysian situation, my family, my generation, so me and my cousins, we were the first in our family to be able to have the access to tertiary education, right? So our generation was really the one that, all of us went to university and were able to. My aunties and uncles were not able to go to university. So when we got that opportunity, it was really also about educating the parents, right? So they didn't know what to expect. What is university like? You're sending your child away to another state and they're going to be living away from you for the first time. So I remember the first time my cousins and I got into university, it was a whole rombongan. It was like a huge entourage of everyone in the family coming to see what the college was like, what the university was like, where the dorms were, where you'd be living. And the parents had an orientation too. So it was really about, the parents came to orientation and the parents learned and saw what it was that we're going to be doing. So the classrooms and all that. And I thought that was a really good way of introducing, what tertiary education, what university is to people who've never been to university.
Well, two of us out of three here are parents, and I'd like to know what you guys think. WhatsApp
018-789-789-8899
or tweet us at BFM Radio. In China it's exacerbated because there's a one-child policy there. Yeah. So it's the one treasure, it's the one, opportunity, because education and, the conventional thinking is that it unlocks the future.
Right. That's right. The one-child policy was adopted in 1979, but that has been abolished since beginning in 2016.
It hasn't caught up yet. So where's that line between, I guess, coddling and, I don't know, it's not seen as coddling, but how would you...
It's either coddling or caring. Because in this story, right, some of them says that some of the parents there, what they do is they bring the kid ready bowls of instant noodles, they buy him soap, groceries, they scrub the floor of his new room.
Yeah, this one takes it to a different level.
Yeah, so there's a line.
There's one thing about going there to see what it is, and there's another thing about,
pampering them.
Well, we're going to be, obviously, that's a conversation that keeps on going. Both Joyce and I are parents, and very interesting. interesting kind of anecdotes for us to, you know, take forward as our children.
Are you
going
to do
right?
that to your kids? Are you going to go? Are you going to camp out when you send them to university, Chuang? Are you going to bring a tent and then camp in the gymnasium?
It
next
depends
door?
On where they go. You know, if we have no money, they go to local college, and
you'll be like, take MIT and
take
go.
MIT
yeah. But if it was overseas, you would go and send them.
No, right? If you get in Harvard or Cambridge, and yeah, I might just come along for a bit of a ride. You know,
So this is just a free holiday, lah. So it's not so much about sending them off to college.
Yeah. Don't out me like that, lah. Yes, it is. You know what I mean?
Even if it's local, but I'm definitely going to go kepo a bit, lah.
You're a bit of a tiger. You're a tiger
mom,
though. You're
not a tiger. Just tiger go check mom. It, check it out a bit. You know what's happening, like the dorms and all. Just to go and have a look. You know, don't you want to know? Don't you want to?
So my friend told me when he sent his son to Edinburgh, there were only two other parents there, and they were both Asians, and everyone else.
So typical.
Yeah. So I think it's also in our culture to not want to let go of the filial ties.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to be coming back in a few minutes. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:21 in the morning. I'm Koo Strong, joined by Joyce Goh and Melissa Idris. Joyce Goh, I love that track. She's called New Light by John Mayer.
Yeah, one of my
every time that song
songs.
Comes on, she gets all a tizzy.
Yeah, so don't talk about my boyfriend like that.
Yes, well, both of them now, Melissa and Joyce. Let's move swiftly along, gentlemen and ladies, to this item from The Verge. Actually, The Verge is this kind of like New Age tech website from America. Interesting stories you've put out. And this latest item points out that in America, Snapchat, actually, which is a social media platform aimed at the young, is...
By saying that, it clearly tells me you're not on
Snapchat.
Snapchat.
Are you on Snapchat?
No.
Are you on Snapchat?
No.
No, right? Well,
I was, and I kind of like stopped using it.
Young girl. Yeah. So anyway, they have taken cognizance of the fact that in America, less than 20% of young people vote in elections, right? And more specifically, the US midterm elections coming up, less than 20% of young people vote. So they're opening their platform to the, I think they've got about 100 million or so North American users on their platform. Mm. And via their TurboVote platform, TurboVote, they're allowing people, or specifically their users, to vote on US midterm elections. Which seems like a good idea, except that I'm a bit reserved. I'll let you guys give me your impressions first.
Well, okay, so this is about voter registration, right? So the idea is to make it as simple and easy as possible for the young
registration
young people,
only, not to vote.
Not to vote. So it's registration only. So it's allowing users to register to vote from their app. So if you imagine, okay, if you take a Malaysian context, right? So now there's a proposal to lower the voting age from 21 to 18. How many of these young users, how many of these young voters or those within that age bracket are registered voters? So let's just say above 21 and above, how many registered early enough so that they could vote in the last elections?
Probably not a lot.
Yeah, not a lot. So if I looked at some of the numbers, as of January 2018, next year. As of January of this year, 3 million Malaysians aged 21 and above haven't registered to vote. So apparently some of the biggest reasons that they've given is that they think their vote doesn't count. They think it's too late to sign up, or they think they're just too busy. Right. So even if you make it as simple as possible, which the EC doesn't here in Malaysia, you know, you have to physically go to the post office or somewhere to register to be a registered voter. Even if you could do it online, the onus is still on you to go and sign up. But what if it was a push factor? There was a push notification that came up on an app that you used all the time. All you had to do was click.
Okay, yeah. But for me, I feel it's just the whole security thing again, you know. It might create more phantom voters. I don't know. I don't know what this could create. Because if you can just, it's one click away. What's that stopping people or maybe even hackers from starting new accounts, starting new voters, you know, well, in inverted commas?
You still have to register.
Yeah, to register.
So you could have a Snapchat account and you could have a couple of fake Snapchat accounts.
Yeah.
But you still have to register and go through all the checks and balances.
I think you guys are sweating the small stuff.
Really?
Yeah. I think the bigger issue is the fact that these social media platforms are now acquiring at a furious pace very, very very, very sensitive information and very, very confidential information about all of us, right? So whether it's Google with all your emails and your surfing history and your YouTube video watching habits, mm-hmm. or whether you're on Facebook, et cetera, or on Apple, even recording your heartbeat and your physical status.
Right.
And but Snapchat
not necessarily that they have access to your particulars, right? So, I mean, when it comes to this registration, it's essentially just a gateway. They're just trying to help users
to register
in that demographic.
So we are very early on in the whole wave of artificial intelligence and big data. I watched Elon Musk on Joe Rogan, right? Did you guys watch that one where he was like 3 hours into it, but, you know. Anyway, so he voiced huge concern about the way artificial intelligence is going, how it can be fall in the hands of the wrong people. It can be very, very disastrous for the human race. And I think we don't really know what we're doing.
Well, I think, I'm positive on this development because I think that it's just a way for these platforms to recognize that their user base is the demographic that needs to sign up.
I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand. I get it, right? But the ramifications, I don't think we fully understand at this point in time.
Yeah, I think they should just make it automatic for people. Once they're hit a certain age, they can vote.
In mature democracies.
Mm. Okay, well, anyway, we've got to call a stop to that conversation and go to Fiona Apple, who's going to be singing Across the Universe, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:40 in the morning. This Modern Love by the British emo rock band Bloc Party. Let's talk about this item, gentlemen and lady, Melissa Idris and Joyce Goh. I'm talking to myself, actually.
I'm a woman, Chuang.
woman and ladies. Anyway, this item from the newspapers this morning, Malay Mail, obviously. We're about 5 weeks away from the election, from the budget 2019. And for the first time, I think, in Malaysia's history, we've got an official shadow cabinet. Now, that's interesting because for the first time, it's also the first time, it's also interesting because many of the shadow ministers under this lineup are former ministers under the previous administration. And they're also asking for resources like select committees and, I guess, financial resources. This is interesting because the timing is quite prescient. It's about 5 weeks away. So this gives the opposition plenty of time to prepare. But it's also a little bit dubious because it comprises a lot of old faces from the old lineup. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I think it's a positive development that we have the shadow cabinet now. So you mentioned it as the first, and I thought about that. Yes, it is the first because previously the opposition did not come up with a shadow cabinet. There was an alternative budget every year, but there wasn't a shadow cabinet, so to speak.
With an official lineup,
with a shadow ministers with a certain holding a certain portfolio, right? So this is good. This is a step to being a mature democracy. And it's, I guess, a step for Barisan Nasional and UMNO specifically to get the house in order. So it shows that perhaps, you know, post GE14 and everyone's gone away, licked their wounds a little bit, come back to the table and say, okay, guys, how would Barisan Nasional look like as an opposition? And they're saying the first thing we need to do is come up with a shadow cabinet. That's the first step. Now, what bothers me a little bit is the lineup, right? So I'm going to kick it off. I think the first name on this list that I have holding in front of me is Khairi Jamaluddin, holding the Minister of Finance portfolio. That was a bit of a shocker to me. I didn't know why he was given that portfolio.
And based on what credentials?
Based on what credentials? It is a question that I will be asking him on the breakfast grill today, since we are going to have the MP of Rimbau on the show. I can ask him point blank how he got this portfolio, what he wants to do with it. So, and this is really prescient because budget 2019 is just around the corner, as you said. What's also famously, I think, conspicuously missing of this list is Dato' Sri Najib Razak.
Yeah, well, looking at the list, we also have for defence, Dato' Sri Hishamuddin Hussein and Dato' Abdul Rahim Bakri. And for law, we have Dato' Sri Azalina Othman Said and Dato' Sri Ronald Kendi. We also have for entrepreneurial development, Dato' Sri Abdul Aziz Abdul Rahim and Dato' Ahmad Nazlan Idris. This is Dato' Sri Abdul Aziz that's been currently ongoing an investigation with MACC.
That's right. So he's currently had some run-ins with MACC. So this is interesting. You know, it's the same faces again, and I'm not sure if I'm happy to see that some of the same ministers are getting the portfolios, right? The logical part of me says, why not have a shadow minister who knows the portfolio, who knows the ministry, who knows what's involved in tailoring policy? Yet at the same time, do I want the same guys who I wasn't happy with, the performance of whom I wasn't happy with,
and voted you out on that basis,
to be you know, back within this realm? So one would be, I think, right, a couple of names. Tengku Adnan is back as federal ministry, under the federal ministry's portfolio. Do we want them? So What is the role of a shadow cabinet? They're supposed
to... Well, in the UK, the shadow cabinet is typically a government in waiting.
Sure.
But because, you know, obviously parties get voted in and out all the
time.
But
it's also check and balance.
It's check and balance.
Right? So the idea is to have the shadow minister essentially keep a watch on the ministry, right? So you're looking at the current government and you're saying, I'm watching your every move, I'm watching your policies, and I will propose alternative policies if I don't agree with it.
So one way of looking at it is obviously the minister keeps an eye out for you and he's got experience. The other thing is, my question is, where are the fresh faces? Where's the young blood? Where are the new ideas? Right? Obviously, that's something you're going to be asking Khairi Jamaluddin, MP of Rimbaud, at 8.05 on the Breakfast Grill. We're going to be coming back in a few minutes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.